It's Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. Presented by the Windjammer Restaurant and Upper Deck Pub. Local, fresh, and Burlington's original steak and seafood restaurant. Now, here's your host, Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? Brady Farkas, Champlain Valley Game Night on a Monday right here on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com, and always streaming on the 101.3 ESPN app. And it feels good to be back. Feels good to be back on the air. We were off last Thursday. We were off last Friday for NCAA tournament action. It's been a tournament that has been a lot of fun to this point. The question is it going to continue to be fun as we move on through the tournament? Most of our brackets are busted. And I saw this tweet yesterday, and it's true. If your bracket isn't busted, chances are you don't follow college basketball that much, because no one could have predicted this. This has been utter insanity. It's been pure madness, to use the pun in every sense of the word. I mean, Virginia out your top seed, another number one in Xavier out. It's the first time that two number ones have been knocked out on opening weekend since 2004, proving to you just how infrequently this happens. It's only the fourth time that it's ever happened that we've had two number ones get knocked out on opening weekend. You're left with a few blue bloods like Duke and Kansas and Villanova to a degree, although I wouldn't argue that they're necessarily a blue blood. They're a program with a lot of history, but you know they're not in the range of a Duke or a Kansas. And then you're left with some, they're not even newcomers. Johnny come latelys. I mean, Loyola Chicago and Kansas State and Florida State football school. So it's been an interesting tournament. It has been a fun tournament, though, and we'll break it all down here within the next hour. Coming up on Friday, you should know about this. We are broadcasting live at Farnham Ale and Lager. It's another brewery on the 101.3 ESPN Craft Beer Tour, and we're going to be there from 4 till 6. I'm excited for this one because it's got pretty much everything that you could want. It's got good beer and good people, and we encounter that on most of our brewery stops. This one is dog-friendly, so you can bring out, all the pups can come out, and you don't have no more excuses of, I got to walk the dog, I got to feed the dog. No, bring the dog. Bring the dog out to Farnham Ale and Lager over in South Burlington. 82 Ethan Allen is the address, so that is the spot that you want to come be. Mac Sugar Shack will be on site with us, and they'll have a ton of great food. And they hung out with us at a remote we did over the summer, and it's going to be a lot of fun. So Farnham Ale and Lager, that's on Friday at 4. I have to start with this, and people were getting all kinds of mad at me. If you want to get in, 802-655-6672, people I think have probably encountered something like this before. I won't give the establishment's name, but there is a place in town that has had a rewards program, and I've lived here for, you know, a year and a half now. There's a food establishment that has had a rewards program, and, you know, there's a lot of places that have rewards program. You know, buy 9 things, get the 10th one free, or Subway, you know, had the points. You know, you spend $1, you get a point. After a certain amount of points, you end up with freebies. So I had been to this place a bunch of times, and I was so pumped. I went there for lunch today. I'm like, okay, I'm going to have a freebie. Like, this one's on you. And they told me, no, you can't redeem your freebie. And I said, why? I've spent X amount of dollars here over the last year and a half. And they said, well, we just changed up our reward system, like today at 8 a.m. And as of today at 8 a.m., all of our previous reward system bonuses are gone. So I have spent all this money and gone to this place a bunch of times and given them a bunch of business, and now I can't get my freebies that I feel I've rightfully earned. And I was so shell-shocked, I wouldn't even have ordered. Like, I wouldn't even have eaten there, except I ordered and I tried to pull the gotcha, got the freebie on you at the very end. And there was no announcement of the freebie, you know, of the reward system changing. And because everything is relatable to Seinfeld, and I know there's a lot of you out there that are Seinfeld fans, but everything in life feels relatable to Seinfeld. That's why it was called The Show About Nothing, and that's why it was so brilliant, because there were things that related in everyday life. Do you remember Elaine and the atomic sub card that she had? Here was a this is exactly how I felt today.
I'm going to Atomic Sub later.
Atomic Sub? Why are you eating there?
I get a card, and they stamp it every time I buy a sub. 24 stamps, and I become a submarine captain.
What does that mean?
Free sub. Oh, I can't believe it. I've lost my Atomic Sub card. I've eaten 23 bad subs. I just need one more. It's like a long, bad movie, but you want to see the end of it?
No, you walk out.
All right, then it's like a boring book, but you gotta finish it.
No, you wait for the movie.
I want that free sub.
You're still trying to get that free sub?
Hey, I have spent a lot of time and I have eaten a lot of crap to get to where I am today. And I am not throwing it all away now.
Is there a captain's hat involved in this?
Maybe.
If you want a sandwich, I'll make you a sandwich.
I want the one that I earned.
Exactly. I want the one that I want the food that I earned. I've got people texting me right now saying, where is this place? I'm already worked up. People are getting into the Town Fair Tire text line 802-655-6672. I'm not going to give the name because I'm not trying to lambaste the business itself. Just the idea that I earned this free food over the last year and a half, accruing, you know, points or whatever it is, you know, accruing, you know, making, spending my money. I was so jacked up to get this freebie today, and now I'm told that it can't happen. 802-655-6672 if you have experiences like that. People are getting in on the Town Fair Tire text line. Brady, I feel bad for you. That is Joe in South Burlington. Nick in Waterbury, must be listening on the app, says, tough break, Brady. Love the Seinfeld clip, so we appreciate that as well. And Elaine never did get the free atomic sub either. So she, like me, shut out. As for what's coming up on the show today, how UVM should feel about UMBC's tourney run, a group of people who need more sympathy and a group of people who really need more sympathy. Ray Biggs of D3Hockey.com at 640, talking Norwich women's hockey in the national championship. But first, upsets are awesome. In the NCAA tournament, upsets are part of what make the madness, and it's what brings in both the diehard and the casual viewer. That's all well and good to a point. And we're at that point right now. The first weekend of the tournament is for upsets, right? Seeing UMBC over Virginia, it was historic. We'd never seen a 16 over a 1 before on the men's side. We're all here for that. We're all glued to that. That's mesmerizing television. And we were all watching UMBC yesterday to see if they could do it again, see if the little guy could do it again. It's cool to see Loyola Chicago hit two buzzer beaters, and they've got Sister Jean, the 98-year-old follower of the program who's been around the program forever, it feels like. Those are cool stories, and they're great stories that we only ever get in the NCAA tournament. And that's what makes it so romantic, and that's what makes it so special. But we're at the point now where the upsets are going to start to work against the tournament, because I have a feeling that the Sweet 16 and Elite 8 ratings, they are going to be down. And we all say we like upsets. We all say we like the little guy. But you can only have so much of the little guy, because then it becomes too unfamiliar. Look at where we're at now. A lot of people's favorite teams are out. Arizona's out. Virginia's out. North Carolina, a huge fan favorite across the entire country, not just North Carolina itself, they are out. Michigan State is out. So a number of these blue blood programs like UNC and Arizona and Michigan State, they're done. Some other great fan bases are out, like Cincinnati and Xavier, they're gone. And now you're left with just a couple of those blue blood programs, Duke being one, Kansas being another, and Syracuse being another. Even though Cuse is an 11 seed, they're still a blue blood program. I mean, we are guaranteed to get in the Final Four one of Nevada, Loyola Chicago, Kansas State, and Kentucky. So you're looking at Loyola Chicago, Nevada. No, none of us have followed. None of us have followed them all year. We don't know anything about them. So now it's unfamiliar. So now your favorite teams are out. Your bracket is done, and that's the reason a lot of people are watching. Same reason why a lot of people are watching football. They're watching it because they like football, yes, but also fantasy football and gambling impact. Now, your ability to gamble on the NCAA tournament on the macro level is done in the most part. You can bet game by game if you want, but your bracket is done. Pretty much shot for the most part. Most of you, your brackets are done, myself included. So now I've lost my favorite team, I've lost my bracket, and now I've lost the familiar. I mean, Kansas State and Florida State, I see, and Michigan. Even though Michigan's a 3 seed, I think of those as football schools. And I don't have much interest in them in basketball. And Florida State and Kansas State are 9 seeds, so I don't have much interest in 9 seeds, especially 9 seeds that aren't mid-major darlings. Now you're giving me Nevada and Loyola Chicago, 2 schools of which I know nothing about, and then you're giving the public the generally unlikable Kentucky. People don't like Kentucky. They don't like the one and done. It's bad for basketball. Because they're one and dones, you don't know much about them, and people hate John Calipari. So Kansas State, football school, Kentucky, who we hate because of John Calipari, even though I like Cal, most people hate him, and then Nevada, Loyola Chicago. One of those four is guaranteed to go to the Final Four. So the upsets are great in the first weekend, but we've reached the point where it's going to be counteracting the NCAA. I bet you the ratings are way down. People's favorite teams are out, people's brackets are done, and the familiarity is over with. Duke and Kansas are going to play each other if they both get to the Elite Eight. That's good because the NCAA needs Duke or Kansas in the Final Four. The NCAA needs Villanova in the Final Four. They need another champion that people might have left, a 1 seed, a questionable blue blood. The NCAA needs that. The NCAA probably needs Gonzaga in the Final Four now too, because over the last 20 years they've gone from tournament darling to, you know, relative fan favorite. So the NCAA still has some teams that it can latch on to, but too many upsets is bad for the NCAA tournament at this level. First day, first weekend, that's good, but you're going to see the fruits of all that now. We say we love it, but how many of you are excited about Nevada or Loyola Chicago going to the Final Four? Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com, 802-655-6672. Let's see. More people coming in on my food dilemma. John in St. Albans, crappy management should have comped you one. Maybe I'll go back and ask. Luke in Burlington, if they change their policy, I feel like they're required to honor any pre-existing points or cards and not just hand out new ones going forward. And then a first-time texter, I disagree with your elitist view. The game is decided on the court, not by someone's opinion of who will or should win. That's why you play the freaking game. I don't know your name, unnamed texter, but that's not really the point here. I'll watch basketball no matter what. I love basketball. It's my job. But the average public is going to tune out. Okay, the average public doesn't care about Nevada and Loyola Chicago. The average public knows that Virginia was the number one seed, and they know that they've got money on Virginia, and they've got them in their office pool and a chance to win money. And that's just, I think, what are going to be the facts. I bet you Sweet 16 Elite 8 ratings are going to be down, especially in the game that's Nevada and Loyola Chicago. People are going to say, okay, that's the one where I'm going to dinner with the wife. That's the one where I'm going out with my boyfriend. I mean, that's how people are going to look at that game. We say we want upsets, but you want upsets to a point. You don't want upsets the entire way. It's the same reason why, look, the Super Bowl is the Super Bowl. That's going to get watched. But is the Super Bowl more interesting if it was Patriots-Cowboys? Or is it more interesting if it's Jacksonville and Arizona? Okay, there's still going to be people watching. But the numbers would be huge if it was Pittsburgh-Dallas, if it was Patriots-Seattle, some of these teams that have now been good for a while or have major brand name appeal. But if you're talking about Buffalo against, Buffalo against the Lions, not as impressive. And it's just, it goes that way everywhere. You'll watch the national championship game when it's Alabama and Michigan, when it's Ohio State and Alabama. Are you interested in it if it was Boise State and Arizona State? No, you're just not. Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. We talked about this in the huddle, and I got to get my final point on it now. How do you think that UVM feels and should feel about UMBC's historic run. UMBC beats UVM in the America East Conference final, and then UMBC goes on and does something that nobody has ever done on the men's side, and that's be a 16 seed that's beaten a one. And very simply, I'll put it this way. If you are the players at UVM, you are not happy about this. You're looking at all the exposure, and you're sick to your stomach. The SportsCenter love, the CBS love, the interviews, everything, the UMBC Twitter account, everything that UMBC is getting right now, you're annoyed about because you're like, you know what? We beat that team by 28 and by 15. And Albany, who we beat twice, beat that team by 40 earlier in the year. We're better than that team. We got beat one time, yes, but we're better than that team, and that should be our exposure. And you know what? We wouldn't even have been a 16 seed. We would have been a 12 or a 13, and we would have done what Buffalo did to Arizona and be a 13 that beat a 4. We would have done what Marshall did to Wichita State and be a 13 that beat a 4. And we would be the tournament darling in the Sweet 16, not Sister Jean in Loyola Chicago. If I'm Trey Bell Haynes, Anthony Lamb, Ernie Duncan, I am sick to my stomach. I am bitter. I am resentful. I am angry. I'm embarrassed. I'm vengeful. I'm motivated. All of the above. If I'm a player at UVM, I am disgusted with what I saw and the national fawning over UMBC. But that is where the bitterness ends. And I was on that side too. On Friday night, I root for every upset for the most part. I root for history. I root for the unthinkable. I root for David and Goliath, David beating Goliath. I was rooting against UMBC against Virginia. I wanted that to be UVM because I know UVM is better 85% of the time. I felt bad that UMBC, that nationally it was going to be a fraud. UMBC was going to be seen as this great champion when really I know they weren't even the best team in their conference. It is a cool story, but I was rooting against it on Friday night. Last night I got over it and I was rooting for them to beat Kansas State. I was all in on UMBC last night, but not Friday night. As far as the athletic department at UVM goes, and even expand it out, the athletic department, the administration, they have to be thrilled with what UMBC did. UMBC making the tournament gets the league $1.7 million. And it doesn't matter if it was UMBC. It would be anybody. Anybody from the America East gets to the tournament. The conference gets $1.7 million. A win gets you another $1.7 million. So now the league got $3.5 million, and of which UVM is going to get probably an equal portion of that. It gets distributed among the schools. So the athletic department gets $365,000 because of UMBC making the tournament and then winning a game. That's a good thing for Jeff Shulman. It's a good thing for John Becker. It's a good thing for the entire athletic department that that gets distributed to. For the conference, it raises the conference profile. For coaches to recruit, it becomes a little easier because you can say, look, we've won in the tournament. Albany's won a tournament game. We've won a tournament game before. UMBC has beaten a number one seed. Good players come to this league. UMBC's got a brand new building. UVM's going to get a brand new building soon. Now this league has good facilities, and now this league has more and more exposure. That is only a good thing. The players at UVM need to be resentful, and I imagine they are, but the administration at UVM has to just be tickled with what UMBC did. And Amy Hucktausen, the commissioner of the America East, she was on ESPN Radio this weekend, and she had this to say about UMBC's impact on the conference.
It's immeasurable, really. I mean, there's certainly the financial benefits with winning the extra unit, and that cannot go overlooked. But in the big picture, just the exposure that the university is getting, first and foremost, I think is fantastic to see people just become more familiar with a school like UMBC. I know a lot of people probably didn't know where it was, doesn't know what UMBC stands for, just from an athletic standpoint, but also from an academic standpoint. And then obviously the whole league benefits from these kind of wins as well, I think. And seeing stuff on social media from our other coaches in our schools, I think everyone takes great pride in victories like this in the NCAA tournament.
So it is great for the league as a whole. The league profile is good. Maybe it helps the league down the line. The profiles of Ryan Odom gets raised and John Becker get raised because of success that the programs have had. That is all good. Big Mike at McGillicuddy's on upsets. It usually has to be either a perennial winner or a big city versus a big city, and the Super Bowl is tops to watch. He's talking about what games attract viewers. He also says, go Villanova. Great job, Brady. Chris, the Mets fan, why is everybody assuming UVM would have won a game in the tournament? Just be happy for UMBC. it's not necessarily assuming that they would win the game. It's just knowing that if UMBC could beat Virginia, imagine what possibilities lie ahead for UVM. And I think that's fair. It's not guaranteed that UVM would have won. You don't know what the matchup would have been. You don't know what the region would have been. But it's fair to say if UMBC could win a game, we have to assume UVM could also. Champlain Valley Game Night here on 101.3 ESPN. All right, when we come back, a group of people, they usually only get your complaints. Today, they deserve your sympathy. That's next, Champlain Valley Game Night.
It's Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, welcome back. Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. About 15 minutes away from Ray Biggs of D3Hockey.com. He was in the building in Northfield this weekend when the Norwich Cadets women's hockey team captured the Division III National Championship, their second title win in the program history. Chris, the Mets fan, comes back in. Brady, I disagree. I disagree. To assume UVM would win a game is wrong. UMBC can play Virginia 10 more times, and I guarantee Virginia would win them all. I agree with that, but I didn't say, again, I didn't promise that UVM would win a game. I just said that the players should be resentful and think that they could win a game. Chris, I like you. You text in a lot. I appreciate that, but I think you're misinterpreting what I'm saying there. I think players have every right to feel like if UMBC could do that, imagine what we could do. And when I watched the game on Friday night, I was thinking, man, all this adulation nationally, this should be for Trayvell Haynes, not Jarius Lyles. I don't think it's wrong to think that when you're that invested in the program as the players are, and even as we in the media here who cover the team regularly have become. Scary news today. Tyronn Lue is going to take a leave of absence from coaching the Cleveland Cavaliers. Said he had chest pain, says he can't sleep. And this is a problem in coaching. Coaches have this problem. And I know the easy answer is, hey, you choose your professions. You know the risks. Well, NFL players are worried about head injuries. Well, don't play football then. Well, if coaches don't have great health, well, then don't coach. I know that's the easy answer. But today, let's be a little more sympathetic. Because usually coaches just get our grief. We blame coaches for a lot of things, or we direct a lot of anger, and a lot of it probably misguided at coaches, at managers, at front office reps, at people in administrative positions with the teams that we care about. Let's be sympathetic today. I don't know how serious what Tyronn Lue has going on is, but I know it's serious enough to take him away from his full-time job and the thing that he loves to do more than anything outside of be with his family. And this is a disturbing trend. And we usually see this in football. We usually see coaches stepping away in football. I mean, listen to this list. Gary Kubiak, he had to retire at a relatively young age from being the head coach of the Denver Broncos. Mike Ditka, he's had a heart attack. Dan Reeves had quadruple bypass surgery while coaching the Atlanta Falcons. Bill Parcells had bypass surgery. John Fox had a heart issue. Bruce Arians of the Cardinals retired this year because of his health. Vince Lombardi had health problems, coaching in his career. He was coaching the Redskins and died weeks later. If I'm not mistaken, well, still the coach of the Redskins. College football, Urban Meyer stepped away from Florida before he ended up at Ohio State. The Minnesota coach had to retire because of coaching. And I don't know that people realize just how stressful being a head coach is, being a college coach is. And again, they chose this life. They wanted to do it, and they know the risk, just like all of us know the risks in our own profession. I do get that. But when you start looking at the numbers and the volume of coaches who go through a lot of things, just step back and be sympathetic and supportive today. We're all rooting for Tyronn Lue to get better. But when you think about the physical demands of coaching, simply put, the physical demands, okay, some of them are as simple as, well, you're on your feet constantly. Some of it is that simple. But the travel, and some of these guys that are getting up in age, some of these guys that are in their 60s, their 70s, that are traveling for long stretches across the country. I think about baseball managers flying from L.A. to Philadelphia at 65, 70 years old. And even though you're flying in first class, that can't be good for you. That's simply put just on the physical toll. Then you throw in things like, okay, You're going to be on the field when it's negative degrees out if we're talking about football. You're going to be on the field when it's 100 degrees and you're 70 years old and we're talking about baseball. That is not good for you either. Then the emotional stress, the emotional pressure. And you look at what Tyronn Lue is under, trying to keep together a Cavaliers team that's been to the NBA Finals 3 years in a row, trying to develop young players while also catering to the league's biggest personality in LeBron James, knowing that he's got this year to keep LeBron happy enough to stay or the franchise practically folds, and he's got the tyrannical owner in Dan Gilbert. That's not easy to deal with, and that's just one guy's story. Imagine being Joe Girardi, the head coach of the manager of the Yankees, and you've got to try to get to world championship number 28, and you haven't done it in a decade. Imagine being John Farrell, who they're running you out of town after every wrong pitching change. I don't make a whole lot of excuses for these guys in colleges that are cheating and trying to pay players at the NCAA level, but think about their livelihood and how it's on the line if they don't win. I can understand how that stress might push you to do things, especially if you know what's happening around you. Again, I don't make excuses for them, but I could justify it. I wouldn't do it because I know I didn't do it, but I can understand the immense pressure that you're under. How about that emotional pressure? How about the psychological pressure? How about the familial pressure that you're under? Do you think that every head coach's spouse is happy with them being gone all the time? I don't know the divorce rate among coaches, but I'm sure at least one coach has gotten divorced before. Belichick's been divorced. How about the strain of not seeing your family? The immense amount of stress that these guys are under. The hours that they work. I mean, Gruden used to tell the stories of working from 3 a.m., being in the office at 3 a.m. watching film, or staying until 3 a.m. and then going back at 6. And look at what they're eating. Look how many coaches are overweight and obese. I understand when these guys make millions like Nick Saban, you just slough it off like you do most athletes. But not every coach is doing that. Ryan Odom at UMBC made $225,000 this year. Now, that's still good compared to you and me. That's still really good compared to you and me. But that's not Nick Saban. And he's putting himself through the exact same things that Nick Saban is to try to get his program to be good. So all I'm saying is coaches get all of the grief. And a lot of time I join in the bandwagon, too, of jumping on coaches that make mistakes. We don't like the play that was called. We don't like the scheme that you ran. We don't like the way you manage the timeouts. Just understand how stressful and how volatile that position is. And we wish Tyronn Lue well. Champlain Valley Game Night. If you want to get in, 802-655-6672. Let's see. We get a lot of people getting in here on the Town Fair Tire text line. Let's see. My eyes told me that UMBC hustled and was better than UVM when they won. My eyes also told me they played a hell of a defense and that fans should not be frustrated. We also get one from Jamie in New York. I imagine the UMBC coach recited the monologue from Miracle before the game. We could play them 10 times and they could beat you 9, but this is your time or something like that. John, for the last 10 or 15 games, Cats were in a malaise. Was it because teams had a scouted and well figured out? Regardless, the Cats were trying to snap out of it but hadn't quite done it. It's a brutal loss, but it happens in sports. Wrong time for Vermont, and the Retrievers just shut us down in the last 8 minutes. So again, 802-655-6672. I'll be very interested, moving to football, to see what Dave Gettleman does next for the New York Giants. Giants have the number 2 pick, and whatever he does, he doesn't need to react to what the New York Jets just did. I was listening to Colin Cowherd today, and I love Colin Cowherd, and he was talking about over on 960 The Zone. He thinks the Giants are going to take Saquon Barkley, the running back from Penn State, at number 2, and he says, man, I think it's the wrong choice. They need to take a quarterback because the Jets just moved up to 3, and do you want to be the Giants looking across town at the Jets and seeing them have a franchise quarterback for a decade? I think the Giants should take a quarterback too, but I don't think what they do needs to be in any sort of response to what the Jets have done. Jets traded up to number 3 in the draft. the Jets are the ones who need to keep up with the Joneses when it comes to the Giants. It was called Giant Stadium, not Jet Stadium. More people are Giant fans than Jet fans. The Giant fans have more of a tradition, more of a legacy, more of a lineage in New York than the Jets do. The Jets are the ones that are looking to make a splash. They're looking to make headway. The Giants have two Super Bowls inside the 2000s. They've got more if you date back to the 80s and 90s. Jets don't have any since Super Bowl III. So the Giants don't owe whatever they're doing. You know, they don't need to have a response to what the Jets are doing. The Jets are the ones that need responses to what the Giants do. If the Giants think they should take a quarterback, take him at two, and that's what I would do. I would take the quarterback that you're going to have for a decade after Eli Manning. And no more position is important in football than the quarterback. I love Barkley. We all love Saquon Barkley. But I would not take the running back because you just saw running backs, well, not a dime a dozen. They can be had other places. Alvin Kamara and Kareem Hunt led the league in rushing and were rookie of the year on the offensive side of the ball. They were both third-round picks. They were both third-round picks. And in this day and age of using multiple running backs, you're not going to just give 400 carries to one guy. Patriots have four running backs. Eagles had four running backs. Teams have multiple running backs, and when they don't, they get burned. Ezekiel Elliott gets suspended 6 games. Dallas has to make the playoffs. Marshawn Lynch leaves Seattle. They can't figure out what to do next. Who depended on one guy? But the Giants don't need to do. They don't need to keep a pick, trade a pick, or take a certain player just to respond to the Jets. So I tell you what, if they do want to make a trade and trade out of number two, they should call the Buffalo Bills on standby and say, hey, your division rival there, they just moved up to number three to get their quarterback. If you want to get the quarterback that's going to beat them, you're going to want to come up to number two, and it's going to cost you a pretty penny to do so. The Giants are in the driver's seat here. I think they should keep the pick, and I think they should take the quarterback. But if they're going to trade it, don't do it because of what the Jets did. Trade it to the Bills so the Bills can beat the Jets, and the Bills have a whole lot of picks early that the Giants can capitalize on. Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Unnamed texter, based on how long the peak career of a running back is, if the Giants aren't going to take a quarterback, they better trade back and give up that pick for a king's ransom, and that would be with the Buffalo Bills. All right, good news out of Northfield this past weekend. The Norwich Cadets women's hockey team captures the Division III national championship. The guy who was there on the call for the NCAA, Ray Biggs of D3Hockey.com. He shares his story from Kreitzberg next on 101.3 ESPN.
It's Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
Welcome back, Champlain Valley Game Night, right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. This weekend, the Norwich Cadets women's hockey team, Division III national champions. It's been a good 365 days for Norwich University because last year the men's team won the title. This year the women's team gets their second title, beating Elmira 2-1 on Saturday. And the guy who was on the call for the NCAA is our friend Ray Biggs. He's also the managing editor at D3Hockey.com. Ray, thank you for being with us. How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty tired, but, you know, that's to be expected at this time of year with so much exciting hockey still left to be played and what has been played.
Well, the Cadets beat Elmira, as we said, win the national championship 2-1. Goal comes late in the third period with less than 2 minutes to go. You were in Kreitzberg Arena on Saturday. What was the environment like in Northfield?
Well, it was positively electric. Anybody that knows me knows I'm not generally a fan of the campus sites concept, but at Norwich University, they did a truly first-class job and are one of the places that can do a credit to that concept and that idea. The fans were raucous. Everybody at Norwich University did their job to a T, and it was a fantastic environment to watch four really, really good, well-balanced teams go at it.
Yeah, we talk about the Frozen Four in Plattsburgh, who's won four consecutive national championships. They lost on Friday in the national semifinals. That's how we arrive at a new champion in Norwich. Interesting year. What did you think of seeing the Cardinals dethroned firsthand?
Well, honestly, it kind of was the continuation of what I started to really notice at mid-season in the Division III women's campaign. I started to really take stock of just how much competitive balance there was when you look at the matchups between the three Eastern powers that were in attendance this weekend, whether that be Elmira in Plattsburgh or Norwich in Plattsburgh or Norwich in Elmira. You look at those matchups and look at those season series, they were all very, very even-handed across the board this year. So I knew this one was up for grabs and that Plattsburgh was going to be challenged. And sure enough, while they did kind of have the better of the energy through 40 minutes against Elmira, you know, had a couple of pucks that were on edge, a couple of opportunities they didn't finish, and Plattsburgh let them hang around into the third period, and Elmira had a tremendous third to tie that game, send it into double overtime.
You know, one of the things that was the coolest thing for me to notice, we've talked a lot about this throughout the year with various different people. So we've got more balance in the women's game, as you said. Then we had Team USA women's hockey win the gold medal at the Olympics. And we started to talk about, okay, is this going to be a tipping point for the growth of the women's game? And now I looked at that crowd at Kreuzberg Arena on Saturday, Ray. That place was completely full, standing room only. It's a good sign for the women's game. You follow it really close all year. Have you been seeing that also?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially, you know, with the campus site concept delivering the championship to such a worthy host in Norwich, that team was positively outstanding, as evidenced by the fact that right now they've got a nice walnut and glass trophy that's about to go into their trophy case. When you've got good teams and the quality of hockey is that high and that well balanced, people are going to come out. People are going to start to be drawn to what the women's hockey product has to offer. And when you look at, you know, the contribution that a team like Hamlin was able to provide out west this weekend as well, I think you're going to see that growth start to not only blanket the East region and the North Country in particular, where there's been so much success, but I think you're going to start to see it blanket the country. And the Olympic team, no doubt, has had a lot of positive energy and provided a lot of a positive influence as well there in terms of the growth of the women's game.
Ray Biggs, D3Hockey.com. He's the managing editor there. He was also on the call for the national championship at Kreuzberg Arena this Saturday for the NCAA, and he's here with us on Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. Ray, let's transfer over to the men's side here momentarily, because what an odd season this has been. Norwich wins the title last year. They don't get in the NCAA tournament. Plattsburgh, perennial favorites in the NCAA tournament, they don't get in. My alma mater at Oswego doesn't get in. Very odd year on the men's side.
Yeah, and it was one of those years where when you look at what happened across the board in the postseason, that was really, I think, the straw that broke the camel's back for a lot of teams. What happened in the conference tournaments were almost zero number one seeds in automatic qualifier conferences actually won their conference tournament. That left the door open for a lot of underdogs to walk through and really made for a crowded Pool C house. So as a result, some really good teams, and you talk about the Norwich Cadets, they made it to the NEHC final. They were very deserving. They got left home. The Trinity Bantams, who played for the national title against Norwich last year, again, they got left home. Same for Oswego, Utica, the list goes on and on. And with the Frozen Four that we've got set for this upcoming week, you've got a couple of true rags-to-riches stories there, whether that be the Colby Mules, who came up from a sixth seed in the NESCAC, or Salve Regina, who 6-7 years ago was an absolute nobody in the national scene. A couple of those other programs that got left home, while the two teams that did get in from the East region are very deserving, those teams are licking their chops at home.
Ray,
going, what could we have done?
Ray, two of the more disturbing trends for fans in our area right now is Plattsburgh hockey and Middlebury men's hockey. So I'll start with Plattsburgh, a team that, look, they got to the tournament last year. They won the SUNYAC tournament to get the automatic qualifier, and they played really well at the end of the year, but they were under 500 for a good portion of last season. This year, under 500 in the SUNYAC, don't make the tournament. What's going on with Coach Emery's squad?
Well, I just think you're starting to see a little bit more of a transfer in the balance of power and where players want to go and where they're, you know, where the top talent in the country out of junior hockey is willing to go. And you've started to see that transfer out of some of the traditional powers a little bit. Mind you, Norwich was still very good last year. But it's filtering a little bit more out to some of these programs that have been the up-and-comers, the types that I just alluded to, like a Salve Regina. Look at their roster now. That's the byproduct of a couple of really, really good recruiting classes there. They've gotten top Eastern talent to stay home, talent that, you know, maybe 10, 15 years ago would have thought about Plattsburgh instead or thought about someplace else instead. Or Middlebury, even when Bill Beeney was in the midst of his dynasty. That talent's going places like Salve Regina now. It's going places like the University of New England now. So I think it's really good for the game as a whole, nationally, that the talent is going where it is and kind of shifting around and providing some up-and-coming programs with the opportunity to really make some headway for themselves. But yeah, if you're one of those traditional power programs, you definitely have to, I think, invest even more time on the road than maybe you have in previous years to really show that you value the prospects that are out there. You're just going to have to find ways to adapt and keep pace with everybody else.
Ray Biggs, managing editor, D3Hockey.com. He was in Northfield this past weekend as the Norwich Cadets women's hockey team captured the national championship, their second in program history. The first time in 5 years that it hasn't been Plattsburgh winning it. So, Ray, you saw some history as well, and we appreciate your time today.
Yeah, no problem, Brady. Always appreciate the phone call.
Yeah, appreciate you coming on as well. That was Ray Biggs of D3Hockey.com. You know, exciting time in Northfield. And, you know, I've missed both the Cadets National Championships just barely. First Norwich women's title was in 2011. I started working there in 2012. Then the Norwich men win last year, but because it was out in Utica, wasn't able to be at the event, so missed that. Also would love to see the Norwich men win last year on home soils. But great for the cadet women, and an incredible run. A tip of the hat to Plattsburgh as well. An unbelievable accomplishment to have won four consecutive national championships. It's, you know, you never think about dynasty in Division III sports because it doesn't get the credit of Division I, but that is absolutely amazing. So a tip of the hat to Mark Boulding and his staff at Norwich. A tip of the hat to Kevin Houle and his staff at Plattsburgh. And on hockey, right after this ends, go on over to 960 The Zone because we're just 7 minutes away from face-off between the Bruins and the Columbus Blue Jackets. That game being played in Boston. It is the first game for Ryan Donato, the Team USA hockey star, 5 goals in 5 games in Pyeongchang. He led All-American skaters with 6 points in the Olympics, and he just finished up his junior season at Harvard University, and he is signed with the Boston Bruins, and he is in the lineup tonight. I know this is not the prospect, you know, of the caliber of Sidney Crosby. It's not the prospect, the caliber of Alex Ovechkin. We're not talking about someone with those kind of expectations. But you know me, I'm prospect guy. I love prospects. I love young players. I love an infusion of youth. And the Bruins have had a ton of youth play a role this season, from DeBrusk and Danton Heinen. They've had a lot of guys who were young play significant roles. And Charlie McAvoy, and I look forward to seeing what Donato does and see if he can be the next Bruin to step up. So that'll do it for us today. Thanks to Ray Biggs for joining us in Champlain Valley Game Night. We're back inside the huddle tomorrow at 4 o'clock, our weekly talk with Tom Caron. We'll have much more as well. Remember, Friday, live from Farnham Ale and Lager as part of the 101.3 ESPN Winter Craft Beer Tour. Great show today. Happy to be back on the air. We'll see you tomorrow. It's 101.3 ESPN.